My Friend and Mrs. Washington by Juan Francisco Lara. My family and friends, the church and my teachers taught me many lessons, but two individuals taught me lessons that were not required or demanded by any conventional institution. If you know San Francisco, you know city lights. I had two city lights. They illuminated my imagination and my spirit. Like so many people who came to San Francisco during the Second World War, Mrs. Washington, the after-school child care teacher at John Muir Elementary School, and my friend, a San Francisco street sweeper, stayed and made their livelihood in the city. I am writing about the San Francisco of my childhood when I was 10 years old in 1953. This was 1 year before the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the 1898 separate but equal legislation. 5 years after Jackie Robinson's color changed to darker blue, and President Harry Truman had desegregated the United States military. My neighborhood, Hayden Fillmore Street, was home to a collection of post-World War II communities. This was well before the glamour of the hippie movement and flower power. During those years, the Hate was a working-class neighborhood where families paid the lowest rent and shared the highest density. Our families were the immigrants and ethnic poor that post-World War II segregated to the Lower Hate near Fillmore Street. In our homes, we compared ourselves to one another, heard stories about the upper-class status of our elders in the old country. No one was ever poor in the old country. And in private, we learned about the ethnic, religious, and marital boundaries between ourselves and colored people, Krauts, Dagos, Limeys, Micks, Japs, Chinamen, Polacks, Kikes, Ruskies, Huns, Slavs, and White Okies. I was a spick, a wetback, or a greaser. Mrs. Washington and my friend were colored, or Negroes. My mother made it clear that we should never say the N-word, even if we heard our relatives using the word. In their own generous way, Mrs. Washington and my friend shared their kindness and left an indelible impression on me that shaped my perspective as a 10-year-old and my future as an adult. Today, some 60 years later, I breathe life into them as I share their story. Mrs. Washington had moved to San Francisco from the Deep South so her husband could work in the shipyards during the war. I recall many an afternoon sitting in the schoolyard, listening to Mrs. Washington tell stories about what it was like to grow up in the segregated South and what it meant to have been born colored. Johnny, colored people had separate doors, toilets, water fountains, and schools. Why would I want to go back there? You don't know what you got here. Them folk hung colored people. You were born lucky, Johnny, she would say. You got a chance to get off of Hayden Fillmore and live somewhere nice. According to Mrs. Washington, we all had a chance. We won the war, she would say. Now go win your own war. You got talent, Johnny. Work hard. You're going places. I often turn this thought over in my mind. Where would I go? This set me to daydreaming and wondering about my future. My own mother had married at 18, bore three kids by 21, and was a widow at 25. I was Mexican-American. The English, the Irish, the Italians, and the Jews in San Francisco had an accepted path for their journey. They ran the city and the profession. African-Americans and Mexicans, what did life hold for us? You got talent, Johnny. Work hard. You're going places. You don't look Mexican. You broke the color barrier. She nurtured my hope with a graham cracker and a carton of milk. By contrast, I never knew the name of a man that I called my friend, nor did he know mine. We simply called each other my friend. He, like Mrs. Washington, had been raised in the South and stayed in San Francisco after the war. Each morning, my sister, brother, and I would begin our journey to school some 7 blocks away. We timed our walk to coincide with my friend's route. In those days, they had a cart and a broom, and they literally swept everything that had accumulated at the curb. If he were at the end of the block sweeping toward us, we would slow our pace so that we were sure to meet him. If he had passed us, we would run down the street after him. He always invited us to look into a box, his treasure chest, suspended on the back of the cart. The items in the box inspired stories that I would create on the way to school. "Take one thing from the treasure chest," he would say. It was a trove of keys, bottle caps, washers, spark plugs, radiator caps, leather heels, buckles, and a seemingly endless assortment of objects. In return, we would offer him a vanilla wafer from our lunch bag. After picking up our treasure of the day, we would continue walking to school. I would then create a story, for example, about a leather heel and where it had walked, or about a small brass key, and imagine, whose diary did it open? Little did my friend know about the value of those items, which became so significant to us as we made our way to school in the morning. Mrs. Washington and my friend never made the evening news. They passed away as anonymously as they appeared in the city. Their families could not afford an obituary in the San Francisco Chronicle. In my heart, I promised that someday I would tell their story. They are not anonymous. They lit my way. I thank them for showing me how people can connect at the most fundamental levels. They taught me about basic humanity, dignity, and grace. Mrs. Washington and my friend actually share life with me today. I will still nibble on a graham cracker, and I will still pick up an interesting object off the curb and imagine its life story.